IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal. And this week we're joined by lighting department veteran whose credits include Elf, Deadpool, Big Eyes, Tron, and Chronicles of Riddick.
It is such a privilege to get to speak to the current president of IATSE Local 891. So let's pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Phil, how are you? Hey, Crystal.
Hi, Keith.
Good to see you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, let's get into where you started in film, because you have an interesting story. And, you know, lots of people in other industries can't see themselves in film.
Yeah.
But there's actually lots of transferable skills. And so tell us where you started.
I started in high school doing theater with the high school drama club. We had one of those classic holes in the wall stages that you see in the gymnasium where, you know, we'd be rehearsing and they'd be playing basketball at the same time. Often I'd be rehearsing and playing basketball at the same time. And that was fun. But so I started there. I started doing bar bands in Victoria, in and around Victoria, grew up in Victoria. And I went to college. I went to Comosa College, took a program there called Applied Communications, which they still miss, apparently, which was a radio television arts. I quit after a year and went on the road with a rock band.
Which rock band?
I became a roadie. I was just bar bands primarily. Then I...
to travel all over Canada?
Eventually, or? Yeah. I did a couple of tours with a band called Idolize.
Oh, yeah.
Opening for Tears for Fears, Gowan, Brian Adams. We did a couple of shows with Toto, which was really cool. And so we did, yeah, I did a couple of cross Canada tours with them. Did one with Art Bergman, which was interesting. And a short stint with Katie Lang and during the Olympics, Calgary Olympics. And then after that, wound up like everybody at Expo, doing lighting at 86th Street, and then sort of did some more touring and wound up working in broadcast television and worked at CBC, at City TV when it was UTV, a little bit of BCTV, which is now, I don't even know who they are anymore, it changed so much, and left that, and along the way, somehow, it just fell into this, really. I saw an ad in a newspaper when ACFC was first coming to town, and went to that one. Got a couple of jobs out of that, and then wound up bumping into some friends that were in this local and came here. And that was it was after the days of black and white. It would have been in the it's been 28 years now I've been in the local, and then I just I just got lucky that, and it's kind of funny, I started as a generator operator and then moved into gaffing, like, because everyone wants to be a gaffer, right? Everyone
wants to be. Until you are.
Until you are, exactly. Well, yeah, I know. And then around the time my daughter was born, about 25 years ago, I started becoming a rigging gaffer. And I found that my skills from rock and roll transferred really, really well, because it was about dimming cable, you know, Soka cable runs, and then, you know, eventually data was the big one now, with all the intelligent lighting. So that's kind of how it all flowed. And you see, like, I mean, one of the top gaffers in town, Drew Davidson, he was an electrician. You know, he was a crew chief on the SkyTrain line between Commercial and Maine. And he came into this industry through other relationships and became one of the top gaffers in the city. Could have been a DP if he wanted to, probably. So yeah, everything's transferable. I mean, you know, rigging grips, a lot of them come out of construction, you know, up in the oil patch because of all the rigging that they do. So it's all, everything's transferable. I mean, the original ones were fishermen. A lot of the early grips came out of the fishing industry, like HERF, right? So It's just amazing.
That's the story that I've always heard about our cable trucks is because of the fishing industry.
Yeah, I think right? so too.
The nets, they would yep. be the way that they pulled them in.
Yeah, that's the historical story I got too.
So I'm looking at your IMDb Pro, and I do like a lot of the credits. I look through your credits on IMDb, and I see a lot of the great films that have been done that here in BC, like Elf, for example. That's where we started working together for quite a while.
Yes, I was that rigging gaffer, if you've listened to his episode.
If you listen to my podcast. But of them all, like I know that Elf is one of your favorite, but it's not the most challenging movie that you had to do, is it?
No. Well, it was to a degree. I mean, I'll start by saying that there's two films I've done that is just crazy, the reaction. Elf, I mean, I have my kids, my 20-something kids. The street cred I got when they were younger because I did that movie is amazing. And the other one was Sucker Punch, and mostly because of the fanboys around Zack Snyder. It's just phenomenal. You mentioned that movie, and it's like... like everything twitches, but Elf was challenging because it was shot. And that was cool too. You got like Bob Newhart, Ed Asner, John Favreau before he was John Favreau. You know, I mean, up to that point, I think Swingers was and Made, right? That film was really challenging because it was shot forced perspective,
right?
So we had like, you know, Bob Newhart played an elf, but you know, he's not really that short and he's not tall, but he's not really that short. So it became a really big deal about dealing with forced perspective. And you know, people tell the stories about, you know, day one and shooting for, and they just did on Netflix, there's that the Movies That Made Us, the Christmas one. And they talk with Greg Gardner, the DP. And he's talking about, the end of the first day. They looked at each other and went, uh-oh. Absolutely nothing. They had to reimagine the entire movie at the end of the first day of shooting with the elf stuff. And then I'm talking with Kelvin Humaney, the art director, and he's talking about the Disney movie Darby O'Gill and the Little People, which again was shot forced perspective. With forced perspective, the person who's supposed to be short can be anywhere from 5 to 15 feet. Behind the person who's supposed to be normal sized. Right. And then if the person in front is lit to a certain exposure, you have to add so much more light to make the person in the back the same exposure. Well, he told the story about Darby O'Gill and the Little People. On the first day of shooting, they browned out Burbank. They flipped the switches and Burbank went dark. Wow. So that was really challenging to figure that one out. Every movie has its little thing. And there's a... I remember when I was doing theater in Victoria, we did Oscar Wilde, and there's a line, we did Importance of Being Earnest. There's a line in there that says, there's no such thing as small parts, just small actors. And it's kind of like, one day in my self-deprecating kind of way, well, yeah, it's kind of like me. There's no such thing as small movies, just small rigging gaffers. Everything has its challenges.
Right.
You know, so Elf had that. Chronicles of Riddick was like, is there enough dimming in the world to make that movie? Then you move on through the years and you get the same kind of thing going on with Sucker Punch, where we're shooting at all these off angles and so we need so much more light. Moving into Tron, where we're using early LEDs. Phil, you were there for a little bit at the end. I mean, fluorescence and LEDs, it was just like, you know, trying to get sympathetic lighting out of a fluorescent tube is kind of like talking about other side street parking to a kumquat. It just isn't going to happen.
But let's talk about one of the best movies I think you've done, which is The Muppets. Right? I mean, when you work with a Muppet, you've hit the pinnacle of your career pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, and I laugh about that. I mean, it's like, I mean, Phil's probably heard this a few times in the past. Like, I got to light the Muppet Theater. Yeah. Like, after that, is there anything else that's really important? You know, we did the process. I was given a bunch of the early movies just to watch, and my kids were quite young at the time. They were kids. I mean, Ethan was 4 or 5, I guess, my son. And he was in love with Gonzo after seeing Muppets from Space, which is a great movie. The mothership landing in that movie is just like watching P-Funk. But so lighting that, so they got to hang out with Gonzo and they got to hang out with Pepe the Prawn and Kermit. I mean, that's so cool for the kids because the puppet disappears.
Yeah.
I mean, the puppeteer disappears. It's just the puppet. He's a human being. So that was great. Working with them, hanging out in the creature shop with the Tex was, I'd just go do that when I had free time. It was so cool.
And Waldorf and Statler, right?
Of course. Of course. It's just not anything without Waldorf and Statler.
So tell us, when you're working on these gigantic, complicated rigging setups, you got to roll with a pretty competent team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a team, I mean, without them, I'm nothing.
So tell us, what is it you look for in your team when putting it together?
A bunch of guys that make me look good and gals. No, what I look for is, because we do so much. Like we have, there's the data, there's the dimming, there's the cabling, there's the power. So you don't necessarily look for someone who can do everything. But luckily enough, occasionally you do get someone who can do it all. And you don't tell anyone he exists. You know, you're mine, just stay. But, you know, so it's that whole thing where you just try and find people. And the biggest thing is you got to find people who can work together and like each other. And because when you think about it, we pretty much spend more time work at work than we do at home sometimes, you know, and which is kind of weird. But so you're spending 12, 13 hours a day with these people. You got to be able to get along. So you have to have that. You have to have people who can roll with the punches. I mean, and easy tempered. Although, I mean, we all have our tempers, and you know, I know I have one. But that's kind of what you have to look for. Really, is just people who want to be there and enjoy the work because it is hard and demanding, but also are able to have a good laugh.
Yeah, I would say that that's a common thread throughout every single department, being able to have that skill.
Soft skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what are the three most misunderstood things about the department, about your job, about lighting, rigging?
You know, without light, it's radio.
That's a great line. I mean, we keep forgetting about that. You actually have to have, well, there's two things you need. You need to actually have the stuff to illuminate, too. So there has to be physical structures, but without light, there's nothing.
Yeah, and the point isn't that the lighting department's the most important. I mean, we get into those kind of silos. The point of that is that it's about without everybody, you don't have anything. And it's about the collaboration. It's about departments working together and everyone having their piece. And I think that what gets forgotten by some departments is lighting, it doesn't really matter. I mean, without costumes, there's this. Without construction, there's that. So you have to work together. And I think that we get sort of lumped off to the side sometimes and forgotten. And then all of a sudden you walk in and go, well, you can't do that because of this, and this. You know, it's like on Sucker Punch, I had to go to one of the art directors and say, you have to move your set 6 feet further off the wall. And they lost it. They were really upset. And I went, but you've built the wall directly in front of the electrical panel. We can't turn the switches on and off. It's against the law. Right? And they walk in, they realize that that's what's happened. So there's those kinds of things, right? So we just I think every department gets lost that way. But it's just, you know, and that's a line I stole from an old Rick Mercer TV series called Made in Canada.
There's another thing you said in your survey in that section. Yes, we do need all those lights that we have ordered. And I think that as well is a very common theme with each department. Yes, we do need that much coffee. Yeah. Yes, I do need this hair product.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think, and that's just cost because often, every department faces this, that you're not necessarily budgeted to what in the end, you know. It's like I did one film, did the film Tooth Fairy with The Rock, and talking with the producer, and we're lighting a hockey rink, and it's like, well, you know, we need this much light, and we're doing all this stuff, and the producer goes, you know, I really wish we'd gotten the DOP that did this movie, and I went, which was, you know, a movie that was shot in a hotel in Mexico. I'm going, we're lighting a hockey rink. He was, you know, they owned that hotel and they're in a place that has all kinds of light and you're like, you're shooting outdoors. This is the, what this movie, you know, so it's like that kind of thing. And that's what it was about. And the problem with lighting, as Phil can attest, is that when you're not using it, it's really noticeable.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just stand around the stands, the forest of stands,
the bins of lights.
So the advent of digital technology and digital cameras that was supposed to, you know, all of a sudden save so much on lighting, that didn't materialize at all.
It did a little bit. I think there are some shows that probably use less light than they might have in the days of, 16. But overall, no. I mean, they... I'm actually seeing just as much, if not more. And I think it's because they're... until recently, the cameras really haven't been as good as film cameras. They're right. Catching up,
right.
So they can use less. But with the new... some of the new things that some of the studios are asking for, it's not... you still need all that light.
But technology has had a huge impact on lighting in terms of just the kinds of lights that are being put out. And now we're able to start considering things like going green and mm-hmm. The environment mm-hmm. and going with LEDs and.
Yep. Oh, yeah, no. I mean, and LED technology is amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like any digital device. It was at computers every 18 months. They everything's obsolete again. It's almost the same thing with lighting, except there's a couple of fixtures that will never change.
Let's just change gears here a little bit. You are the current IATSE Local 891 president.
Yes.
Tell us how you were motivated to run as president.
Well, you know, I mean, I've been involved in the local off and on for most of my time. I was the chair of the lighting department for a number of years. Been involved for like most of the last 20 years with ESTA in the ETCP program. And sometimes you need to do what you say, I guess. And I've been, you know, I've been in the background a little bit and it just was time, I guess. You know, you can bellyache about things not working right, but unless you put your foot forward and try and do something, that was ultimately what it was.
And was there anything that took you by surprise being the president? Anything that was...
COVID.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, I didn't sign up for that. No one did. But, there are a lot of things that you learn as you go in everything, no matter what. And the minute you stop learning, I mean, in my mind, I kind of had this drilled into me. My dad was a school teacher. And then so his friends and then going through life. It's like... The minute you stop learning, you're done. So there's always something new. There's always some change. Everything's a new, every day is a new day, even in here. So there's things around how we operate, because I mean, we are huge. We are the largest local in the international. And a fairly large union local, period, doesn't really matter where you're talking. So there's all kinds of things that go with that. There are... responsibilities that you don't know exist until you get there. You go to conventions and meetings and you meet other presidents and have dinners with them and meetings and whatnot to find out how other locals are doing. And you go, oh, so we're not the only one that has that problem? Okay. So then, you know, and you find out how they've been handling it because some of them have been in office for, you know, a decade or more.
So the learning that you talk about, IATSE, well, 891 really spends a lot of money and puts a huge budget forward every year for training for our members.
Yep.
Did you take advantage of that while you were just a member on the floor as well? Or
I arranged through, I did. And some of it was through, you know, a lot of it was my involvement with ESTA and the Electrical Power Working Group, working on ANSI standards. For entertainment electrical. And because of that, I was attending LDI pretty well every year, and if not every year, every other year.
What's LDI?
Sorry.
We have listeners that have no idea what we're talking about. Well,
it's called Live Design, and it's a trade show. Primary. It started out as a lighting trade show, but now it's got video and sound and all of that kind of stuff. It came out of a... It was created by publishers of a magazine called Lighting Dimensions, which is now called about 20 years ago became Lock Design. So it's a trade show for primarily rock and roll, but the film industry was heavily involved when I first started going. You know, Mole Richardson and Arri and Phillips and all those companies are there. Some of them are still there, some of them are not. So I was doing that. I did, like you, I went to Plaza 1 year, which was really cool. Then also, because of my work with the Sky Panel on the first season of Series of Unfortunate Events, I got to know the people at Arri, and they invited me to a lighting symposium in Salzburg. So the union, the local sponsored that, so that, because I was representing, basically, at that point, there was two Canadians there of 60-odd people. Hmm. So there was that kind of stuff. It took some console training as well, and just enough to get myself in trouble primarily, but also so I could, the best thing about that for someone in my position, some of the training, like console training for rigging gaffers, well, why would a rigging gaffer want to run a lighting console? It's not about running the console. It's about asking the right questions so you get what you need out of the console and the console operator, so that person can understand what you're saying and give you what you need. And that's a really important thing, I think, for everyone to do, is even if it's not something you're operating every day, it is good for you to know how it operates so you can speed up the process. So there's that, and, you know, and some other, a lot of other things like that, you know. And the other, you know, the safety training and all that kind of stuff that you need just to be able to do your job.
Why do you think we're internationally known for having some of the best crews?
Because it's not that no isn't said. It's more that it's a no that's kind of a maybe. We don't necessarily know you can't do that. Unless you know you can't do it. But so we always try to figure out how to do those things. So we're known for being adaptable, having the desire to make sure it's done right and getting it done and doing everything you need to be able to make it happen. So we have that never say die attitude, I guess, is would be a way of putting it. So, and you know, we're really nice people. And not just because we're Canadians, we're just really nice people. So we have that, people like coming here because of all of those things. I've heard stories of other jurisdictions where directors of photography come back, I am so happy to be back here. The last place I was at, they really don't care. But everyone here, it's just so awesome to be back in Vancouver again. So that's kind of, I mean, when you hear that, it's really cool.
Who is the who is the filmmaker that you've enjoyed working with the most? Because you've worked with, you've got an impressive line of credits. And
there's no one. I mean, it was really cool to work with Tom Stern on Exorcism of Emily Rose. It was, and the RoboCop reshoots. Additional photography. And, you know, Tim Burton was amazing. Bruno Debonnell, his director of photography, who had just done Llewyn Davis, right? So that was really cool. You know, I mean, one film I did, I got to work with a polar bear. I mean, how cool is that?
Aggie.
When Aggie was no bigger, I mean, she was like the size of my lab. It was her first movie. It was called Alaska. We were in Tofino. We were in Whistler. And, you know, and it was like Aggie. It was so cool. So that was a neat one. Kermit the Frog.
Right, yeah.
You know, once you worked with Kermit, is there anyone else? You know, I mean, and for camera people, there's been some really cool ones that have either been, you know, it's an early film for them, their big break, or they've been around for a while, like Russell Carpenter. I did two films with him, and that was really cool. I mean, how often do you get to work with an Academy Award-winning director of photography? And he's a really cool guy, and that was fun. And we, you know, we just sort of, you know, both in films we just played, right? And then, you know, working with Ian Kincaid, Bob Richardson, DOP Bob Richardson's gaffer, was really cool. So it goes on and on and on. But there's always that, I'd love to work with that person and that person. But you just look at who you've worked with and go, this is great. This is cool too.
If you had one piece of advice to give someone looking at getting into our industry, besides going to ourwork.ca? Yeah. What would you recommend? What would you say?
That's a tough one. Because there's no one thing. But at the same point in time, I mean, you have to kind of follow. With this industry, you have to follow your passion. So you have to find the one that works, the place that works for you. So you don't want to really give up on that. At the same point in time, you do have to understand that it's a hard place to be. It's a hard industry. So that's the, usually I talk about. I mean, you know, I as much as I want to say, yeah, come on down. Just you got to realize that. I mean, really evaluate where you're going, what you want to do, because it's a tough place to be. It's fun. It's great. You get to do some really cool things. Like one film I did, it was like what they lamp ops. His line was, "This has been so cool. 17 rooftops in 7 days. I've seen so many cool vistas of the city. And, you know, there's a rooftop garden over there. You're allowed to go hang out in." So, but it's enjoy it. You got to be able to enjoy what you do. If you don't enjoy it, don't bother. And that goes to anything, really. I think I've been blessed. I've been able to enjoy pretty well everything I've done.
Well, that's one thing that's changed now that you're the president, right? You have a little more routine, a little more schedule.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there is that. Though, you know, it's definitely not, you know, I mean, anyone thinks that any position as a union leader is 9 to 5.
Yeah, that was the big surprise for me when I took over this role. I said to my wife prior to running, I'm like, great, we'll be able to schedule vacations. I'll be 9 to 5 in the office. I'll be home for dinner every night. That has not materialized.
Yeah. I understand, and I can relate. But having said that, you know, it's a wonderful position, and I'm really happy I'm here, and I'm really blessed.
Right. So if you could go back and tell 18-year-old you one thing, what would it be?
Invest in real estate. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, you talked about following find your passion,
yeah.
And find your fit. Yeah, and it sounds like you've done that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really lucky. My dad was a school teacher and my mom was, neither one of them wanted me to, I don't even know if they wanted me to go take college, the radio television arts in college, but they supported me the whole way. Right. There was never any question of do this, do that. And I was really lucky with that. And that's what hopefully I've given my kids. I mean, they might tell you otherwise, but you'd have to ask them. But yeah, so I think I've been lucky. I mean, I did that and it's turned out okay.
Well, thanks, Keith. I think it's been fantastic to just have a chance to chat with you. It's like we were back sitting on Apple boxes.
Yeah. Or sitting next to the lighting console and trying to figure out how, you know, like on Riddick and you and Sean coming up and saying, hey, I want to try this. And I'm like, oh, man, I have no idea what you're talking about. But okay, sure. Right? And yeah, no, it was fun. It was good. Hopefully I didn't put my foot in it too much and it was a really good time. And thank you very much for having me. And hey, I'll come back. I've got more stories. I already got started.
Awesome. Great. Thanks so much, Keith.
Thank you, Crystal. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks again, Keith. I guess that's a wrap on Apple Box Talks for today.
For our next episode and to get your career rolling in the film and TV industry, check out ourwork.ca.